heard a testimony of a gentleman that was a week at church camp, and he told stories about him and his relationship with God. It was just like, well, it totally changed my life, because it showed me that that's what I wanted for myself, was that walk with God. And so I just thought, wouldn't it be great to grow up and tell stories and people like get their lives changed? You know, I think they call that preaching or teaching or something. But so I'm like, this is like so cool, right? And then every time like I go to the leadership and say, hey, I think I got something I can share, I just get like, oh, is it going to be good? Is it going to be okay? Is anybody's life going to get changed? Help! So it's just like, why do I do this, right? Whatever. If you see my notes up here, oh my gosh, you'd really be nervous right about now. Probably more nervous than I am. So Ava, stand up, please. Just you don't have to say nothing. Just stand. Good job. Stand up. Now, she didn't know the sermon was going to be about Tarzan, right? Maybe she's like very prophetic and doesn't even know it. Okay. She walks in, I'm like, I should have wore that. Not really, but you know what I'm saying? Maybe more of like a no, no. You know, there's a consensus of no. So like one of my daughters is really into like costume design. Yeah, I don't know. Just take a wild guess. And she's also got a gift of wisdom, at least more than I do. And so I said, hey, I'll dress up like Tarzan. She's like, no. I'm like, seriously? It'd be like so fun. She's like, no, it wouldn't be. So I'm like, dang, I just have to submit to my daughter. So then this morning, I'm like, okay, no Tarzan. So I want to wear my new cool Lanfear shirt, right? So I'm like, but I'm not dressed up enough to be preaching. Yeah, right, like that works anymore, right? So I put on this black shirt underneath it that had like the collar thing to come out, just a normal button up under this. And I walked into the kitchen and all of my daughters go, no. And then my wife, oh, you should have seen her face. I mean, she didn't have to say no. I'm like, geez. I mean, this is not like Tarzan, it's just got a little collar. They're like, what are you thinking, Dad? Okay, never mind. Doesn't matter. The only thing that really matters is if God speaks through me in the next few minutes, that's the only thing that really matters, right? So I seen this, you know, movie. I know there's a bunch of Tarzan movies out, but there's one that's like got real people in it, you know, not just like the cartoons and stuff. And so I seen it a couple years ago at the theater. There's one scene in it where, you know, I was just like, oh my gosh, that is an entire sermon in like 30 seconds. If you could grasp it, you know? And then I rewatched the movie later, and then there's another, I'm like, how did I miss that scene? There's another scene that I was just like, oh my gosh, that is really powerful too. So we're not gonna watch them yet. The first one's like a minute, second one's 2 minutes. The second one has subtitles because what she says is so powerful. I'm getting ahead of myself, but anyway, the second one's got subtitles. Well, anyway, so I see this movie, and I'm just like, okay, God, you know, of course, God's timing is so important because his timing is perfect. He knows exactly what we need to hear when we need to hear it, whether it's in a form of a dream, a song on the radio, a friend that calls us. Minute by minute, day by day, he knows what we need the most and when we need it. Isn't that awesome? Oh, Lanfear won. Yeah. Yes, by 1 point. They're 2-2. You know how many years it's been since they've been 2-2 this early in the season? Of course, I guess it had to be this early in the season to be 2-2. But you know what I'm saying. I don't know much about football, but I know a win is a win. I know though what a W means, right? So I had to wear my shirt. But anyway, okay. So I felt like God was just talking to me, you know, about, you know, the scene in this movie and how powerful it was. And then me and my family went out east, pretty recently. And I shared before how, you know, we went to church out there, you know, because we were only gone one Sunday. and I heard this sermon that was so powerful to me personally. I'm like, that just answers like every question I've been wrestling with as a Christian and with God and with my spiritual walk, like on a silver platter for like the last 7 or 8 years of my life. Just like, wow. Here. I was like, whoa. And so, like, of course, what are the chances of traveling to South Carolina that I've never even been to in my life, going to a church that I've never been to in my life, listening to a man speak that I've never met in my life, and God is just like, you know, sometimes he just does things to say, I am so in control. I am in charge of everything. I know everything. You gave your life to me. You put your life in my hands, Larry. I got everything covered. Everything. So I think God just delights in the oh my gosh, what was that, to build our faith. You know what I mean? And that's why I love testimonies, is because, you know, we all have 24 hours in the day, and even when you're sleeping, you can have a dream from God. You can have an encounter with God at any moment, even if you're asleep, which I think is so awesome of God. So anyway, so I go out there, and I hear this sermon. And at first, when I was listening to it, I kind of had a mixed reaction. And then the deep truth of what this man was trying to share finally got to my heart, past my brain, right? Because when he starts out, basically, he is kind of, I don't say harsh, but it's a pretty in-your-face statement. He starts out by saying, I'll try to say it nice, because it hit me kind of hard. He said, talking in the spiritual world, it is illegal to dream your own dreams for your own life. What? That doesn't sound very American. I mean, watch the movies. They tell you, you do anything you just try to do, just try hard enough, you'll do anything. I don't think that's completely true. I could never play the guitar and sing like certain people. Believe me, it's true. So he says this statement, and he said, God has not only a dream for us, but the story already written, okay? And he said, you know, if you just do a quick survey of the Old Testament, just a quick glance, think about Moses, right? He's not only out in the desert, it says he's on the far side, wherever that is, but according to God, it was far out there somewhere. And, you know, the scripture doesn't say, and Moses was in prayer and fasting, seeking God to show up in a bush and talk to him and tell him what he needed to do with the next season of his life. It's like he walks up, he's like, why, what is that? It doesn't seem to be smoking and burning away like a normal bush should. And then God speaks to him and says, this is what we're going to do the next season of your life. And you know, he says, no. Get somebody else. I can't even talk right. I stutter. No. He's like, nah, I don't think so. And God's like, okay, you can take someone to talk, but you still got to go. It's your call, dude. It's my plan for your life. And then, like, Joseph, he has a dream at night. Now, we all know we can't control our dreams, right? If God sends a dream and you're sleeping, you just have the dream. You don't get to go, stop. You just have the dream, right? And even Abraham. God came to Abraham. I mean, Abraham, I just graduated high school and I think I'm going to become the father of many nations. I'm like the most likely to succeed in my senior class. I was voted that, and I think I'm just going to take that to the bank and declare over myself and my own strength and power, I will be the father of many nations. I mean, it's almost funny, you know what I'm saying? It's like God, Read it in Genesis. God came and said to him, this is my plan for you. Right? And, you know, just on a real personal level, the reason this sermon helped me so much when I was listening to it was because, you know, I was teasing a friend of mine the other day, Christian friend of mine, great person of faith, prayer warrior. But this person at the time was having a little stress and having a little anxiety. And I said to the person, I said, well, you know, you don't come from a family of overreactors. And you're not an overreactor. So I'm sure everything's going to be just fine. They're like, oh, fine. You're just being funny now. Well, I come from the family of just strivers. We got any strivers in here? I mean, just be honest. Maybe none. Are you a striver? Okay, at least you can admit it. We got a striver over there. No other, Dan May, see, I'm not the only striver in the world. So when I heard this sermon, God basically said, what are you striving for, really? I mean, you can trust me, really. I mean, you put your life in my hands. You obey me, you follow me, you try to hear my voice, you try to obey the best you can. What are you worrying about? What are you trying to make happen in your strength? Because, I mean, if it's your dream for your life, anybody can come against that. Anything can just tear that to shreds, right? But if it's the Lord's call, the Lord's written, you know, God speaks things. I mean, when God spoke in Genesis, the earth was formed. That's a pretty powerful speech. But sometimes God not only speaks something, he writes it. Whew. Good luck getting rid of that one. Good luck coming against that one. You see what I'm saying? And the scripture says that he wrote your story. That's pretty powerful. I mean, if we could magically all just zip up to heaven for just a little bit and go into the library and open the book, there it is, your story, written by God. Now, we all know that we don't have to follow God. It's a choice. But if we choose to give our lives to God, I mean, Psalm, was it 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it. The world and all who live in it are the Lord's. Well, I think we qualify. I think that's us. We're his. We're not even ours. Now, the good news is, if we're his and we choose to put our life in his hands, Femi, I just loved your story, by the way. It was a great prep for what God's already going to say. I mean, God already said it. Now we're going to say it again. Even your problems aren't yours. You know what I'm saying? Even your needs aren't yours. Whoa. I wish I could just take my own advice. I'll go home and listen to this sermon. I go, God, that's pretty good. I need to walk in that. I need to live in that. I need to dwell in the morning when I wake up. You know, I got the list, you know, of things I feel like I need to get done. But what I really need to say is this. In the morning, when I'm looking at my overwhelming things that I feel like need done that day, I need to go to James 4. He says, some people say, you know, I'm going to go do this day and this business in this town for this long, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this. And James says, what you really need to say is, if it's the Lord's will, I will this. And he's not talking about little kids. He's talking about adults. He's talking to adults that have responsibilities, that have families, that have needs. But even when you're an adult and supposedly have it all figured out, you still say, if it's the Lord's will, which is basically saying, I'm not 100% sure, right, of everything that the Lord is going to lead me in and have me do and what season is next and what it's going to look like to follow the Lord in the next season, right? So even though at first it sounds almost harsh to say it is sin to dream your own dreams, it's really peace, the peace of God that passes understanding. Because that's what he intended your mind and heart to dwell in. Not just visit every so often, to dwell in, to rest in, to abide in his peace. So now in the morning, I think it would be a better prayer to say, God, I think I need to get this and this and this done, but Lord, I trust you that whatever is my part, I trust you to give me the grace to not only know what to do, but the strength to do it. So peace. Peace of the Lord. The joy of the Lord, okay, is our strength. You know, Scott shared last week about just a lot of the things swirling in our earth right now on the news, and not a whole lot of good news if you watch the news lately, really. And it's going to become more and more rare for the sons and daughters of God to shine with peace and joy in the midst of the storm. And there's a lot of storms, right? So, anyway. So if you are not your own, your needs are not your own. Your problems are not your own. Even though I know you'll meet a lot of Christians that are very well-meaning that still believe it's up to them. Figure it all out. Make a plan. Control it. Hang on. It's a roller coaster. Those people don't always like beam peace and joy. I mean, not always. Sometimes you just want to run away from them. Get away from me. I'm trying to have some peace and joy. Now, God will test us, of course. Not that he doesn't know the end of the test. He tests us so that we know the end of the test. Does that make sense? Because he doesn't miss anything. I remember when it was the summer before my ninth grade year in high school. And that's when I got just radically saved. You know, I went to church camp and they had a missionary that just shared his testimony. And I was raised in one of those churches that was extremely well-meaning, okay? Extremely well-meaning. But they never talked about a relationship with God. You know what I'm saying? And here this guy at church camp is talking about just like this personal interaction with God, and God spoke to me and led me and intervened in this way and did it. And I was like, is that even possible? I mean, I just had never heard that. Does that make sense? I was like, what? Is this even real? Is this guy completely out to lunch? But you know how when the Spirit is radiating from someone, there's a confirmation in your spirit that what you're hearing is real and true in God. So I'm like, I just jumped off the cliff, no parachute. I'm like, I'm going to give my life to God. Every aspect. Now, when you do something like that, there will be tests. Not for God, but for you. So that you know where your heart's at. So, I lived on a farm. My dad was one of these farmers that would take on 10 times more work than could ever get done. But of course, if you're in the family, you're obligated to try to get it done. And we just worked all the time. We worked Sundays. We worked Saturdays. We worked every day of the week. We worked evenings. We worked mornings. We worked all the time. Now, we did go to church on Sunday mornings. That was a nice break. But we worked all the time. And, you know, without saying anything that doesn't need to be said, home was not a happy place at all. It was very not good. A lot of bad stuff went on. Well, anyway, we moved to a farm and got an old farmhouse when I was going into the fifth grade. And the nice thing was is that the farmhouse, even this old piece of junk, it was big enough to have your own room. I was like, yes. So me being whoever God made me to be, I don't know why, I built my first man cave when I was in fifth grade. I mean, I carpeted that old junky room, you know, carpet and painted the walls and got all Hot Rod magazines, tore out all the color pictures and put car pictures on the walls and built the little toy models of cars, Hot Rods, and lined them up on the shelf, bought a stereo. I mean, it was pretty cool for a fifth grader. I was pretty proud of it. And that was like my getaway. That was my little sanctuary, you know what I'm saying? That's where I went just to feel a bit better about life, get away from my crazy family. Not the whole family, but mostly my parents, but anyway. It was my little sanctuary, right? My getaway. And so, and I'd been fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. I'd been working on my room for 4 years. We'd lived there for 4 years. And it was hot summer, working out in the fields. And man, if I seen a thunder boomer coming, I'm like, yes, we get to take a break. Because it's pouring rain on the farm. So I remember just big old cloud boomer come in. I'm like, yeah. So I ran up my room. Where else am I going to go? That's my little getaway. And I love music. I'd play music and everything. And I had just given my life to God like 2 months before. I mean, radical conversion, right? And I'm standing in my room, and all of a sudden, the window, like rain starts coming through the window. Now, when I say through the window, I'm going to try to explain this. Anybody that's ever worked construction will get this, but this house was literally built in 1860s for real, okay? This wasn't a modern nothing, okay? The glass was so old, it was kind of almost fuzzy to see through it because it's from 1860s, all right? So I'm like, rain is coming through. So I'm like, I pull the curtain. I'm like, don't get my stereo wet. What's going on? You know, this is my little sanctuary. You better not be getting my stereo wet. So I pulled it, and this glass, like all the caulk, if there was caulk in the 1860s, I don't know what actually held the window in. But you know what I'm saying? But the window, I mean, this is just going to sound weird. The glass was bowing out, like in, it was bowing so far that the rain got around it. What? I'm like, I've never seen that before. So I took my finger, because I didn't want my stir getting wet, and pushed it back in. And it stopped raining around it, or coming through. And then I let go, and it went, brrr. I'm like, dude, I'm not a physicist, but that's weird. So, and then I looked out the window, and there's this little town across the field called Leiterberry. It's like 100 people there. And just across the field, and I seen like this storm was coming in, and this is really weird. Never seen this before either. It was like, just like a wall. When I say a wall, just like a wall of black. Just like a flat, like sunshine, a little bit of rain, just a black wall. I was like, well, I never seen that before either. And it's like just coming across the field, like about half a mile away, and I'm just watching this just black thing come at the house, you know? And so I'm just like, whoa. Not smart enough to like run and hide. I mean, you know, guys are just weird. Women were like, I'm out of here. Guys are like, I'm just gonna hang out and see what happens. Because we're stupid. And so I'm just like watching this wall come across, and then like when this wall finally hit the house, I mean the house is just like shaking. Just like, what the heck? And now, this is kind of important detail. I mean, these old houses had huge windows to help heat it up with sunshine, right? And this window was probably, you know, this wide, okay? And tall, like a two-thing window, right? We could slide one part up, had the old weights, dummy weights in there. And the bottom one was the one that kept bowing out. And so I'm just looking at this wall thing come across. And boom, when that wall hit the house, that window that I was, now listen, I'm not making this up. I was standing right in front of the window. I mean, I was right here. That thing exploded in, okay? You know? Well, I didn't know it, but a tornado just went over our house, okay? People in Lyderbury watched it go over our house. Boom, okay? I mean, glass was stuck in the far wall 15 feet away, and I didn't get touched. Just think about that a little bit. Who's in control, really? But my room, my sanctuary, had 100-something mile an hour wind and rain for let's just cut to the chase. It was destroyed. I don't mean it was ruffled. Like all my models, my cars, I spent like weeks building these cool little cars, just went flying and smashed into the, just all my cool posters are like in a wet, muddy ball. I mean, it was trashed, and I couldn't stop it. I mean, I'm like, what, how do you, I mean, you can't, you know, what, you're not gonna slow this down. You know what I'm saying? Woo! And the rest of the house, no one even knew what was happening. I mean, all the other rooms, like downstairs, they had a little rain. I'm like in emotional crisis mode. I'm like, my sanctuary just got destroyed. I'm not very happy. So after I kind of calmed down, I mean, and I couldn't even stop it. It's like, do I just go find a piece of wood real quick? You can't that quick, you know. So I just literally left the house. I just like walked. I just like went on a long walk. And the Lord's like, it's kind of like the Peter thing. What are you going to do? Well, whom else am I going to go to? Do you still trust me? Am I still your Lord? Even if I let things happen and I take idols out of your life that you've been clinging to for years, do you still trust me? Will you still serve me? Do you still love me? That is a drama, dude. I mean, I know it was a long time ago, but that was drama. You know, I was looking at the book of, John 11 talks about Lazarus, right? Being raised from the dead. And if you really read that story close, there's a lot going on there. And because first off, Jesus was personal friends with Lazarus and Martha and Mary. I mean, these just weren't, you know, somebody running up to Jesus, oh, my son's sick, would you please come and heal him? I know I've never met you, but I hear you're a healer. And no, these are personal relationships that he had established for a long time, okay? And Jesus was not there when Lazarus got ill, super ill, like they think this guy is going to die. Right? That's how bad he was. So, I mean, what else would you do? I mean, they'd seen Jesus heal everybody else. You're going to send for Jesus. I mean, he's your personal friend. Of course he's going to come as soon as he can, because he couldn't possibly, you know, want Lazarus, his friend, to die. So Jesus and his disciples got word. And it says right there, Jesus is like, we're not leaving yet. We're going to wait. The disciples are like, this is a new one. Okay. We trust you, but I have no idea what you're up to, Jesus. So basically, Jesus waits for him to die. Kind of harsh. And he's like, okay, now we can go to see Lazarus. So he makes the journey. And I guess Bethany was only a couple miles from Jerusalem. A lot of people knew this family. And there was just a whole bunch of people came even from Jerusalem to comfort the family in their time of loss. So they get word that Jesus is almost there, and Jesus stops short of just going in the house, and Martha comes running to Jesus and just, now this is important. I think you need to hear this. What she does and what she says. She fell at his feet and said one word first. She did not say friend. She did not say even Savior. She said Lord. She trusted and respected Jesus, even in the midst of tragedy. that she knew he could have prevented. That's big. She said, Lord, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. Her trust was, even when things went totally different than what God could have done differently, right? That's a big one. She falls at his feet and says, Lord, if you'd have been here. And Mary just doesn't even come out. Mary doesn't even, I'm not even going to talk to Jesus. I'm so mad at Jesus. I can't even face him. I'm so angry. I can't even talk to him right now. Because she was so upset that Jesus did not intervene. So Jesus tells Martha, go get her. I do need to talk to her. Maybe if you tell her I'm asking for her, she'll come and talk to me. So Mary comes. Exact same thing. Falls at his feet and says, Lord, if you'd have been here. Now, if you keep reading right there in John 11, there's three different times when it describes Jesus' emotions. You know, the shortest scripture in the Bible, Jesus wept. That's where it's at. It says that Jesus wept. He was overcome with sadness and emotion. This is important. And it said that he was very angry. And it says again, he was very angry. What? What? What's going on? God, talk to me. Give me a picture here. I need to understand this. I think I need to understand this. Jesus knew he was going to heal. I mean, raise him from the dead. Now, why would Jesus, who knows the Father said, you're going to delay it, and then you're going to raise him from the dead as a powerful witness, what is he crying about? I mean, no, seriously. Because our emotions are responsive to what we believe in our hearts. They're the caboose. They just flow out after we believe something. Whether it's true or not. If we believe something's true, we react emotionally to it. Good or negative, right? What? Why is Jesus crying? And what is he angry about? You know, I think, first off, his heart broke just because he cared so much for his friends. He entered into their reality. Right? It wasn't Jesus' reality. Jesus knew he was going to raise him from the dead. This is huge. When we go through battles, when we go through struggles, God literally, he's not having the struggle and battle, right? He enters into our emotion, to our heart, to our mind, to our struggle, to our battle, our grieving and our sadness. This is huge. This is not a small revelation, right? And also our joy, right? But also our struggles, our doubts, our grieving, our losses, to comfort us in our time of need. See, you get some of that? I mean, I know it's not really complicated, but I just never sit down and read it and prayed, and God's showed me, and I listened to some sermons about it, and I read some commentaries. I'm like, yeah, I'm not the only one that thinks this. You know what I mean? But wow, that's a big deal. Jesus is not only my Lord and Savior, he's my counselor and comforter. Even though it's not his trial, he cares so much for me that his heart was broken because their hearts were broken. Right? Even though he knew within minutes he was going to raise him from the dead. Wouldn't it have been easier on Jesus just to skip that? He could have just said, you know what, just quit your crying. It's all good. Just shut up. Would you just trust me a little bit more and quit your whining? I would make a terrible Jesus, okay? I mean, horrible, right? But he didn't. He stopped. I mean, just read it. He stopped. He wept. And you know what I'm saying? He didn't rush ahead to the resurrection. Even though it was happening very soon, he stopped first and entered into their pain, they're lost, they're confused. They're very confused. They're like, Jesus, I am completely lost here. Why didn't you show up? You know? But anyway. So let's think about this. Jesus says in the New Testament, I wrote it down somewhere, I swear I wrote it down. If you cling to your life, if you hold on to your life, you will lose it. Jesus, what? That seems a little backwards. But then Jesus says, basically, if you lose your life, if you give it to me, lose control, give up possession, give up ownership, give up lordship to Jesus, then you'll find it. You'll find the story God wrote for you, your true life. Does that make sense? That's what you'll find. You'll find true life. Now, Jesus says, it is for freedom I set you free. But also, it is for life I created you to have life. I gave you life to find your life in God, your true life. Does that make sense? There's a lot of peace there. Does that make sense? There's a lot of peace there. Surrender, complete surrender, is the key to complete peace. Yes. Right?
That's right.
I mean, it's not long algebra, but it's more like math, I guess. So, okay. So God has the audacity to ask us to completely give our lives to him, to not dream your own dreams. Now, it's true that God put in our hearts a desire to do his will. Now, of course, the earth messes with that, distracts us from that, tries to distort and twist what God put in our heart, right? When we're born, that we're called to do for him. So it gets very messy, very confusing, very distracted, can become very self-centered, confusing. And believe me, the enemy wants all that. Okay? But let's just think about it in its simplest terms. God has asked us all to completely surrender and give our lives to him unconditionally. Well, if that's true, one thing I want to know for sure: how much do you love me? I mean, if you're completely in charge of my life and you ask me to trust you no matter what, are you going to do a good job? Are you faithful? Are you going to get tired of my sin and junk and abandon me sooner than later? Like, I probably would myself. Anybody else would if they really knew me. What degree of commitment do you have to me, God? That's a good question. It's an honest question. It's a real question. And it's got to be answered in our hearts. And we're going to watch a little clip. If it plays, Femi's back there being the hero because he's trying to make something that who knows why don't want to work, try to work. So let's just pray. God, just if this is your will, God, if we're supposed to watch this clip and be inspired and encouraged, help it to play. Amen. All right, flip the lights down. Let me set the clip up. I'm sorry. Oh, God, I'm like not very organized here. I've watched the movie, but that don't mean you guys have. So it's the story of Tarzan, which is a very, very simple story. And we're going to watch two different clips. They're very unrelated. Well, the first clip is where, all right, Tarzan is this little kid. His mom and dad die. A pack of apes, like, adopt him. A mother ape raises him. And all he knows are animals. He's never been around humans. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't remember his mom and dad. He was a baby when they died. and he was adopted by this gorilla mother, and he learned about the ways of, you know, the jungle and the animals, and he was a smart person. He wasn't an ape, of course, but he learned about nature in ways that almost no one else could. Of course, this is a fictional story, but that's how the story goes. He's never seen a woman. Ooh. Wow. Right? Almost like Adam. Whoa. God, where you been hiding her? She ain't nothing like the hippopotamus that walked by yesterday. Or anybody else for that matter. So you're holding out, God. But you know what I'm saying? He's like never seen a woman. And so like this woman like is like in the story, her and her dad are like doing missions work and teaching, you know, natives how to, you know, read, and like they're kind of like missionaries. And so she wanders off to play hide and go seek just a little ways into the jungle away from the huts, right? And Tarzan and the gorillas, their pack or their are nearby. Of course, the young lady doesn't know that she's in danger, because in the gorilla world, they accepted Tarzan only because of the circumstances, but any other human would be viewed as deadly, because most humans hunted the gorillas, and the gorillas knew that. So they would just kill any human. They would not kill Tarzan, but they would kill any human. Okay, so she's like playing hide and go seek with some of the kids, like the, you know, and then Tarzan sees her. I didn't play that scene. I mean, this is like the second half of that scene, because he's just like, oh boy. It's pretty hilarious, but anyway. So this scene picks up right where Tarzan, she doesn't realize it, but the gorillas, like Tarzan's over here looking at this woman, and instantly, whoa, he is so taken, it's hilarious. And then he thinks, I need to go lead the gorillas away from her, right? Because if they see her, they'll kill her. And so she doesn't realize why this crazy man or whatever man like is like just kind of drooling over her, and then just like disappears really quick, right? And so she kind of like, oh, ape man. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the scene picks up, okay? It's only a 60-second scene. Then we're going to talk about why I felt like we need to watch it. You can turn the lights back on. We've got to answer the question in our hearts, how committed is he to us? You know, I've been told since I was a little kid, Jesus died in my place. How do you get a hold of that? How does that change your day? How does that change your life? How does that change your heart? How do you really believe?